You're with SBS Radio.
Scheduled for this Saturday, August 15, Pacific Unite Saving Lives Together virtual concert is envisioned to be a regional extension of the UN's Global Goal concept. The event is set to bring Pacific communities together in solidarity, recognizing that we must work together to beat COVID-19 and build a better future. Now, my guest today is the UN Resident Coordinator for 10 countries in the Pacific, Mr. Sanaka Samarasena. Welcome to NITV Radio, Mr. Samarasena.
Thank you for having me, Bertrand.
Before the pandemic, the environment was the biggest issue, and I believe continues to be the biggest ticking bomb over the region with Pacific leaders. We've seen that they have made remarkable appearances in COP summits 21, 22. How has the pandemic changed the situation?
Bertrand, I think that in fact, the situation with respect to the climate emergency hasn't changed one bit. Indeed, the fact of the matter is, I keep saying to people, if anything, this pandemic in some ways is a practice run, not just for the Pacific, but for the whole world. And if you don't get this one right, we most certainly won't get the climate change emergency right. For the fact, the fact of the matter is, we haven't been getting the climate emergency response right in the last years, despite so many people talking about it. Action has been quite slow, as you know. And that's largely through no fault of the Pacific. I mean, the problem, of course, is that the Pacific ends up being on the front lines of climate change, whereas those who've helped to contribute to this climate change, the global sea levels rising and so on, are not in the Pacific. So no, it hasn't changed anything, at least in terms of the emergency, so to speak. Indeed, if anything, it must, the global community, the international community, must solidify, must learn the lessons of this pandemic in dealing with the ongoing climate emergency as well.
Yeah. Now, the region is very diverse, both geographically and demographically. How are the different Pacific countries faring during this pandemic? Because we've seen the figures. Some haven't reported any casualty at all. Some have reported some casualties. The lockdowns and curfews are implemented differently. How are the different countries going?
I think first we must recognize that the Pacific as a region has fared quite well in keeping the pandemic at bay. Of course, there are some countries where we've seen COVID-19 cases, but if you compare how the Pacific as a region has done with any other region in the world, really we are very fortunate that we've managed to countries in the Pacific have managed to keep COVID-19 at bay. In fact, out of the 10 countries that you mentioned that I cover in my team, the UN team supports, 9 countries to this day have remained COVID-free. The one country that has had COVID-19, Fiji, out of the 10 that I cover, has been COVID-free for more than 100 days. Of course, we can't let our guard down. As we've just seen in New Zealand. New Zealand was COVID-free within the community for more than 100 days. And now it's subtly surfaced. So we have to be extremely vigilant whilst recognizing the achievements of the Pacific so far. It has had different impacts on different people, obviously, in different countries. So one of the things that we are really concerned about is whilst we continue to be vigilant and help with the health sector response, the economies of the Pacific Islands across the board are struggling. Those economies that are highly dependent on tourism, there are several countries that, 30 to 40% of GDP has been dependent on tourism historically. Countries like Fiji, Palau, Tonga, Solomon Islands, Vanuatu, Samoa, Cook Islands are hard hit with zero tourism in the last few months. There are other countries which have been quite dependent on remittances, such as Tonga. Again, a significant percent of GDP comes from seasonal workers and other migrant workers.
Yeah, who comes to Australia for fruit picking and so on, yeah.
Precisely. So the absence of movement between their home country and the country where they work has caused enormous problems. First of all, economic problems, but also social problems. I mean, you can imagine for families to be cut off, not being able to travel back to be with their loved ones has an enormous toll. And then there are other countries like the Marshall Islands up in the north, you know, where there is a significant number of seafarers. And there is, as you know, in some parts of the world, a humanitarian crisis of seafarers being unable to get off ship or in other cases get on board ship in order to be able to get some work and earn some money. So these countries are impacted in different ways, but bottom line is that people are suffering despite the fact that the health aspects of COVID-19 has not hit the islands as badly as other parts of the world. People are suffering here.
Gladly, there's this event that coming up on this weekend, coming up on Saturday to raise awareness. And many countries and organizations have placed financial support and commitment on the global goal itself. What would you say about Australia's commitment as a country that's often portrayed as a regional leader? Because this has really a worldwide appeal. Yeah, what would you see Australia's role in this and so far the commitment that Australia has made?
Australia has been a significant partner for Pacific Island countries and, of course, to also working closely with and through the United Nations entities that I coordinate here in the Pacific. There have been very significant contributions to the health sector, to help these countries prepare and respond to COVID-19. In fact, Australia has been a significant contributor through the UN system to set up a humanitarian air service. We started the first humanitarian air service flight last week out of Fiji to Papua New Guinea. Australia also hosts warehouses for the UN system where these medical equipment and medical supplies for COVID-19 in particular come in and get stocked. But not only for COVID-19, there are other types of very urgent medical equipment and supplies, vaccines, for example, for measles that need to be distributed around the Pacific. As you know, we had a measles outbreak at the end of last year, which claimed several lives in a number of countries. That's one area where Australia has been providing significant support to the Pacific Island countries. They have also provided support, budget support to countries to help their economies, to help the social protection schemes that countries have, and of course to continue to provide some sort of income and livelihood support in these countries. Some of the countries that I mentioned where the economies are really suffering. And then, of course, as far as the concert is concerned, you know, we are also very happy to have Australia as a partner. We have several groups from Australia that are performing in this concert on Saturday. And it will be broadcast in Australia through your station and others. And we'll be very happy if people in the Pacific, from the Pacific, who live in Australia as well as Australians, you know, would tune in. I think this is an important moment in time for us to re-emphasize the significance of solidarity, the need to take care of ourselves, but also to take care of our neighbors in the process. And in some ways, by taking care of ourselves, you'd say we are taking care of our neighbors as well.
Yeah, and one thing that struck me is just because even before the pandemic, most of the Pacific countries didn't have the right infrastructure for medical treatment. And a lot of the time we had transfers to Australia or New Zealand for most of the most difficult cases. But now with international travel at a standstill, how are the people doing? Because strokes and other illnesses haven't stopped. How are the people in those countries dealing with difficult health conditions during this pandemic?
It's a very important question that you ask, and I have to say that this is a particularly challenging area for the Pacific Island countries. There is still the possibility of, in a very serious case, and when there is adequate lead time for some medical emergency evacuations to take place to Australia and New Zealand under the appropriate conditions. But you know, at times these things happen very quickly, and it's the fact that we don't actually have the flights, or in order to get the flights sorted and all of the approvals done, it may not be sufficient time. And this is a real concern. I mean, obviously, in the medium and long term, what we need is much more investment in the health sector and the health system. We have always been advocating, as the UN and as the World Health Organization, that countries around the world and in the Pacific must spend at least 5% of their GDP in the health sector. Obviously, it depends on what you spend on. But there is critical infrastructure for sure. There is skills training. And in the short term, you know, we need to be able to potentially bring in teams of Australians, New Zealand, and other countries, you know, doctors, nurses, healthcare workers to help amplify the capacity that exists here. But in the medium term, really, the real solution is to be able to provide, at least in some of these countries, perhaps it is not possible to provide that level of healthcare to every country, but those countries need to be able to have access. And so Fiji, for example, I know, is trying to position itself in a way that could potentially provide health, certain levels of health services to other countries around Fiji. And similarly, we'll have to think about the North Pacific as well. But it is a challenge right now. And I'm afraid we must not, there could be a tendency where we take the eye off the ball in the sense that we focus so much of our attention on COVID-19 and its response and our resources, which is important, no doubt. But we do know there are serious problems with NCDs, for example, and strokes and heart disease, and diabetes and so on. Those services, we really need to continue, at least continue to the extent that we can in these difficult times.
Now, coming back to the upcoming concert, can you just give us a breakdown of the different participants? Because as we were preparing for this interview, you mentioned some royal presence and participation in the concert, and I've seen that one of the biggest New Zealand chefs is part of it. Our big groups from Australia will be performing, including Paulini, who is a very famous black Australian artist. Tell us about this concert and the big involvement.
So it was very interesting. You know, some people say that the best ideas get stolen. And so this really struck me back in April. I was sitting in my living room in lockdown in Suva and watching TV with my kids. And I was watching this Global Citizens Concert, which brought together people and was organized by Lady Gaga and other artists, who brought together people around the world in their living rooms to say, look, we need to stand in solidarity with each other in order to fight this pandemic, and also to pay tribute to the frontline workers that have been saving lives around the world. And as I was watching this concert, it struck me that we have an enormous amount of talent here in the Pacific. And of course, one of the things I think has helped this region significantly at the time of this crisis is the fact that we have a very rich culture that brings communities together, that holds communities together. We have a deep tradition of compassion for each other. We take care of each other. And it's not just simply out of a sense of obligation. Or because some government structure instructed us to do so. It is quite natural for this region. And so it seemed to me at that time when I was watching this concert that we need to look at how to bring that to the fore. And that's how, you know, it started. It was a small idea of seeing somebody else do it. And then it just continued to grow, and more people said, you know, we're coming on board and got excited about it. So I'm really happy to see, exactly as you've said, that there are a number of Australian artists, including Paulini. But, you know, we have also artists from, I think, more than 10 or 12 different countries, New Zealand as well, and from the North Pacific to the South Pacific, from Kiribati, from Vanuatu. We have a great artist called Vanessa Kwai in, from Vanuatu. We have a guy called Knox, who's been very much a part of this from Fiji. And then, you know, from Tonga, we have the Taloa Boys Choir. Now, that's from the region. What I'm also very happy about is that some global artists decided to stand in solidarity. We decided to make this primarily about the Pacific, but we selectively invited a few people, global artists and global leaders, to stand up with us in solidarity. Because at the end of the day, yes, we need to come together as a region, but this is a global pandemic. And if we're going to fight this, we've got to also fight this as the world. So I'm also happy to say, you know, people like His Royal Highness Prince Charles, Phil Mactor, one of my personal favorites, Forrest Whitaker, Yo-Yo Ma, the cellist, the international famous cellist, you know, they're all part of this. And so there are messages of hope, messages of solidarity, along with a lot of entertaining music and dance from the region.
Most definitely promising to be a hit. And something to look forward to, because 15th of August is a date that we will all remember for many years to come. Mr. Samarasinghe, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. Very early in the morning, took you out of bed, and you hardly had any sleep, and you just took the time to answer our questions. It's really a great honor and a great pleasure.
Thank you, Bertrand. I think the excitement of the lead up to the concert means I'm probably not going to sleep the next few days either. But thank you so much for this time, and enjoy the show.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.